St. Vincent de Paul have released a statement today saying they're receiving 30 calls an hour in August from parents who are worried about school costs. A lot of school children did return to their primary school classrooms today, and I know a lot more will be doing so tomorrow. Niamh Dalziel joins me now. She is SVP's Research and Policy Officer. Good afternoon to you, Niamh.
Good afternoon, Ciara. Thank you for having me.
No, well, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining me. So these parents are calling the helpline 30 calls an hour on average because they're unable to make ends meet. They're unable to meet the cost of sending their child back to school. We did go through different reviews over the past couple of months in terms of sending a child back to school. Mm. I believe it's around €1,200 on average when it comes to primary school, and it could be near €2,000 when it comes to secondary school.
That's right. Yeah, we are seeing those costs is becoming quite normal for a lot of parents. And that 30 calls an hour for parents who are struggling to make the costs of back to school, but also having to balance between that back to school cost and their normal everyday bills and the rises that they've seen recently too.
So the 27th of September, that is going to be Budget 2023 Day. It was due to be the 11th of October, but it has changed to Tuesday the 27th. And you're calling for, in terms of Budget 2023, measures such as expanding the free school books to all students in primary and secondary education. That would be at a cost of €40 million. Whatever happened to the idea of the tablets, etc., being provided by the schools themselves instead of children having to carry around not only the cost of these books, but the weight, literally?
Yeah. We are seeing that. We are seeing that parents are still being requested to purchase things like tablets and school books at the same time. So that thought that perhaps tablets would replace the school books doesn't seem to be happening. So yes, parents are having to add that cost into back to school.
Now, you've also asked for increased support for children who are experiencing educational disadvantage in non-DESH schools, that is. Looking for a €4 million educational equality fund. What exactly would that fund be going towards?
That would be going towards the provisions that those children and young people need to be able to experience education on a more equal footing with those who don't need that support.
And how would those children be pinpointed within different schools that are non-DESH schools?
I guess that would be going into the detail with the schools themselves and working that out directly with the people who, you know, are working directly with the young children and the people in the schools.
Now, if we look at the 2017 school costs circular, at SVP have asked for the full implementation and monitoring of it. Tell me a bit more about the 2017 school cost circular.
Yes, so that is a circular sent out by government to all schools, primary and secondary in Ireland, with several cost-effective practices that schools must adopt, covering things like school uniforms, being able to buy better value uniforms, iron or sew on crests for their school jumpers, providing a book rental scheme, and also engaging with parents on a much more regular basis about suggestions and initiatives to reduce the cost of sending children to schools.
Now, of course, ensuring also SVP are calling for children with additional needs to be able to access supports they need. This is by increasing support through NEPs or NEPS and early intervention teams. Tell us a bit more about NEPS.
Well, I think it would be about covering that need and supporting those young people in the way that they would need it. That would be people working with the children in post-primary and primary schools around their learning behaviour, social and emotional needs. So that would be providing that support directly to those young people who need it.
Now, Niamh, it's noted here that one day in the early days of August, SVP did receive approximately 450 calls, and many were explaining the guilt and the pressure they feel because they thought or felt that they weren't doing the best for their children. Just how run off one's feet is somebody at the helpline in terms of SVP at the moment?
Well, SVP are, as you know, national. We are in every city, town, and we are across parishes in Ireland. And we're there to support people who are feeling that pressure and really trying to hold it all together for their family financially. And we think about a parent's well-being also, you know, the impact of those pressures and trying to meet those costs. We really want to let people know that we are here to support them, and reaching out for the support is no shame in that. We know that parents feel that they are the ones that are supposed to provide for their children, and they do, but really understandable at this very expensive time of year that they need support, and that's what we're here for.
Well, Niamh Dalziel, SVP's Research and Policy Officer, thank you for joining me. Just to go through some other quotes that parents did say. One person said, the back to school allowance didn't even cover the cost of my child's books this year. I still have copies, shoes, school bags and uniforms left to buy. And that's without doing the shopping, obviously the grocery shopping, and covering all of the bills. Somebody also said, I haven't been given enough hours at work this month, and so I'm not going to be able to pay the bills and cover all the back to school expenses, and they're not entitled to the back to school allowance. Another, we are struggling financially and still waiting to hear if we are entitled to the back to school allowance. And some more here saying that the back to school allowance only covered the cost of my child's tracksuit. They have grown and they also need new shoes and runners, as well as a full school uniform. And finally, to leave on, I've bought an iPad and books which cost €1,400 this year. The uniform is still to be bought. I'm doing my best to keep it all together. And of course, SVP do want to note that they are available for anybody for help. You can head on over to their website. That is svp.ie for more details like that helpline. And at the moment, as Niamh pointed out, they're getting around 30 calls per hour. If you do want to become a volunteer, you can join their team. You can get onto their website there, click on the application to get more details, and you'll find out everything you need to know about that. And to give the phone number out for St. Vincent de Paul, it's 01-884-8200. Now, the government, their progress on climate and environment, it has dropped to C from a C+ grade. This is an independent assessment. It's the second annual one, and it has revealed a mixed bag with the falling scores on climate and energy, not offset by improved progress on nature and transport commitments, I should say. I'm joined now by Dr. Cara Ostenberg. She is Assistant Professor in Landscape Studies and Environment Policy, and also the chair of this assessment panel. Good afternoon to you, Cara.
Thanks, Cara. How are you?
I am well, thank you very much. Not great for our government, though. They're slipping in terms of their grades.
Yeah, you know, we look at what the government committed to do when they were formed in 2020, and there's actually nearly 300 commitments related to climate and environmental protection in their own program for government. So these are the things they told us that they would do if they became the government. And so we're holding them to account for these. We're not necessarily saying these are the best things to do, but just how far have they progressed in their own promises to us? And what we've found over the last 2 years is that while they have made more progress this year in the areas of nature and biodiversity, and certainly more progress in relation to making our transport more sustainable, they have actually started to slow down in their progress on climate, on energy. Of course, we're in the middle of an energy crisis, and we're now burning three times more coal and oil than we did between 2020 and 2021. And I think the one that came as most surprise to me is just how little progress we're making in terms of building up our waste and drinking water infrastructure. So we just aren't building that infrastructure, and we're not looking at conserving water in the ways that the government had committed to.
So if we look at those 300, I guess, targets, promises, whatever word people want to use, the government or anybody who supports them or doesn't support them wants to use in terms of that, number-wise, how many of those have they potentially or on the way to reaching?
Well, in certain areas, we're seeing progress in almost every commitment. So if you look at, for example, waste and the circular economy, nearly every commitment that they have said they would do, they're making some progress on, and we can decide on whether or not that's good enough or the, you know, the quality of the outcomes of that progress. But we actually gave them 8.5 out of 10 in waste and circular economy, because they have actually achieved a lot of legislation and plans. And we do think that in year three of their tenure, we'll start to see those changes on the ground in terms of changing our waste costs and our circular economy structure. And in air quality, they're delivering on probably about half of their commitments. So they were very successful in getting a smoky coal ban in nationwide this year. And that's something that three previous governments were never able to do. So something they should be commended on. But at the same time, they've committed to developing a clean air strategy. And that seems to have completely stalled. So their score has remained the same this year as last year.
Now, I want to ask you about the next score on agriculture, 4 out of 10, not improving there. And the reason I just want to bring it up in particular is because a lot of people within the agriculture sector who are working within it, I should say, will note places like China, parts of the US being very bad in terms of their climate footprint versus those farmers here in this country. They feel like they're unfairly targeted. They feel like the difference that the changes they can make is much less to what bigger countries can do in terms of very small changes. And they feel like the Irish government has the whole focus on them, I guess, when it comes to potentially dealing with the climate crisis here in this country. What would you say to people who have that view about it?
Yeah, well, every country has to do their part to solve a global problem. So if every country doesn't do something, then we won't solve it, you know, even if America and China did it.
Only frustration people have about that, Cara, is that, you know, Ireland is obviously, like, in the whole scheme of things, a very tiny country. People want to protect the environment. We love our environment, our nature, etc. here in Ireland. You know, we're known for our nature. It's not our weather, it's our beautiful lands, etc.
Yeah.
But when you see these massive countries, you know, burning the amount of fossil fuels they do, or places like America, by and large, a huge majority of America is not great when it comes to even the basics like recycling, which Irish people, it's within the culture now. You know, your grandmother, your child, your sister, it's in every single generation now. But it's just not spread across the world like that. And that's where a lot of people get their frustration from.
Yeah, but I think if you look at Ireland's emissions relative to the rest of the world, I mean, there are 25% of our global emissions come from countries exactly like Ireland that make up less than 2% of global emissions. So if all of those small countries don't do their part to help address this problem too, they're, you know, it's worse actually than America, which is less emissions than that. So I think we all have to do our part. And Ireland is starting from a really good base in terms of the fact that we don't have a lot of manufacturing like they have in places like China. A lot of the electronic goods that we buy come from China, and that's why their emissions are so high. And we do have a grass-based agricultural system, which puts us at an advantage in terms of being more sustainable. So the time now is for every sector to do its part to address what is a global crisis. And if we're not seen to be doing our fair share globally, then we end up becoming economically and competitively disadvantaged in that other countries will shame us. And we're seeing that in places like Brazil, where they aren't doing their fair share, where they are destroying rainforests, and they're essentially being blacklisted from trade in places like Europe because of it. So we don't want to be one of those countries with a bad reputation, and there's absolutely no reason for us to do so. So on agriculture, we have scored them 4 out of 10 for their progress and that they aren't meeting the commitments that even this government said they would do. So we can argue about whether or not those commitments were enough. In fact, the commitments in the Program for Government on agricultural and environmental issues are relatively small, and even then they are not achieving those commitments. So they need to step up the ambition to allow farmers to have opportunities other than the intensification of agriculture, to give them opportunities to farm in other ways or preserve land in other ways, and reward them for those other uses of land management and those diversifications from the current intensive system.
Your colleague, the chief executive at Friends of the Earth, Oisin Coughlan, overall summed up the assessment as the government could do better. And a very good point a lot of people will feel he has made is that, in short, Ireland is in the climate and energy emergency, the whole world, and the government have to start acting like it. He said they did it for COVID and Ukraine, but they just aren't doing it for the climate.
Yeah, and I mean, in some ways, I'm sympathetic in the fact that it's hard to be in crisis mode all the time, and we all got, you know, quite sick of being in crisis mode with COVID very quickly. And I think with the climate, it is a long term crisis, so we have to be in this crisis mode for a while to get our emissions down and to really transform society in the way we need to address the crisis. So you can see how it's hard to be in that kind of reactive mode for long, but it is the necessary thing to do to address emissions. I mean, this government has committed to have halving emissions between now and 2030. And in fact, our emissions are going up, not down. So this is a very worrying trend, and they really do need to get much more serious in terms of the implementation. They actually have a lot of good plans and they have strong ambition, but it's the on the ground implementation of their promises that they're really starting to slow down on. And that's becoming a concern.
Well, thank you for your time this afternoon. That is Dr. Kara Ostenberg. She is Assistant Professor in Landscape Studies and Environment Policy at UCD. She's also the chair of that assessment panel, and the government have received a C grade on that. This is the second annual independent assessment. From the first annual, they received a C plus grade, so a slight decrease there. You can get more information and the whole report on the Friends of the Earth website. That is foe.ie. Coming up after the break, we're going to be speaking about the eighth cycle of the Acorns programme. They're calling for early stage female entrepreneurs here in this county of Kildare living in rural Ireland to get involved. You may have remembered covering of this before. Acorns, that is the accelerating the creation of rural nascent startups. And we had the founder, Paula Fitzsimons, on here on Kildare Focus. This year, it's the eighth cycle of the programme. This is for early stage female entrepreneurs living in rural Ireland. We're going to be speaking with one of those now. I am joined on the line by Mary O'Sullivan of Barra Bitters. How are you today, Mary?
I'm very good. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join me today. going through a little bit first about yourself, you grew up down in Kerry, obviously having a great year back as All-Ireland champs. You have a lot of experience in botany. And you said, or it's noted here about yourself, that you knew how to select the right botanicals. That's to concoct the perfect infusion for cocktails. But in college, you studied wildlife biology. So you wouldn't think 2 and 2 makes 4 there. So how did your studies, I guess, help you to create your business, which we'll get onto in a moment?
Well, I took an awful lot of, like, say, a plant-focused approach with my studies. So where possible, I take botany-related projects. And I do an awful lot of, say, habitat surveys. So I kind of have a good idea of what would be going on around me and what would be growing around me. And then I worked for 6 years with Chagask on plant breeding programs. So it was like developing new cultivars, so just like crossbreeding for different traits. And then I decided, I took a notion and was like, I wanted to start my own business. And it was an obvious step, for, or at least obvious to me, I thought, to do something that was plant-related. So what I was doing was looking at different flavours and extracts that you can take from plants by infusing them in alcohol. And so what my business is, Barra Bitters, we make cocktail bitters for bars and restaurants.
Yeah, so Barra Bitters was set up in 2019 and set up right before, you know, something pretty seismic was happening. So I'm sure that was impactful for you. But the Acorns programme, how did that help you?
Well, I think it's kind of one of those things that, especially with COVID, it really emphasizes how if you're an entrepreneur, it can be a very lonely experience because you're just working away at home or in your own office, or maybe you might be in a co-working space, but different people can be at different stages. So Acorns is a particular focus with both women and rurally based women. So you just have to be outside of the main city, so Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway, and rurally based. And they... you're sharing kind of thoughts, ideas of like what you're doing with your business, sharing goals, and then there's an element of accountability as well, because it can be very easy to end up grifting when you're working for yourself.
You're based here in Naas.
Yes, yeah, I'm in just in Ladytown in Naas.
So your day to day in terms of your business, are you running that out of your home? Do you have premises in terms of the actual, I guess, office based side of things?
I do have premises, actually, but I have to say that, like, during COVID, I just got very used to working from home. So I still work from home most of the time, even though I do have, I have office space as part of my warehouse. So I can use it, and I can use it for meetings and things. But I tend to just work from home most of the time.
If there's anybody listening who has their own, you know, entrepreneurial idea or already has some sort of a business set up, how and what would you say to encourage them to get involved with the Acorns program? Because unfortunately, there's still not enough. Maybe they'll never be, some people would say, female entrepreneurs in this country.
I'd say have a look on the website. If you look on www.acorns.ie and just have a look and see if it applies. Because if you have a strong business idea and you're along the path of developing your business, you don't have to be quite trading yet. I mean, like, it is specifically for female entrepreneurs, but like, when you're on the path, you're on the path. And have a look. The deadline is Friday, September the 23rd. So I would say just kind of keep it in mind. You've got about 3 weeks to kind of start thinking about it.
Well, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. That is Mary O'Sullivan. She is the founder of Bear a Bitter, set up in 2019. And she worked with the Acorns program, as I said, accelerating the creation of rural nascent startups. She's based here in Naas, and her business obviously helped throughout the Acorns program, which is in its eighth cycle. And that's for early stage female entrepreneurs living in rural Ireland, which includes anywhere here in this county. So it's designed to support them based on the belief that entrepreneurs learn best from each other. It's an initiative centered around interactive roundtable sessions that are facilitated by fellow entrepreneurs known as the lead entrepreneurs, and they have started and successfully grown businesses in rural Ireland. Applications can be made. You can email info@acorns.ie. There's also an office number here, 01845 0770. Of course, if you missed any of those numbers, you can call us here at the station. The cabinet signed off on a 1.6 billion euro public pay proposal. This is included a plan for a 6.5% pay rise over the next 2 years, which will now be considered and voted on by unions. And the initial response as a whole from union members to the proposed pay deal has been positive. That is according to the General Secretary of the Irish National Teachers Organisation. The INTO's John Boyle, he has said that members are already considering the detail of the pay agreement. And yesterday, Bernard Harbour, who is, of course, with Forsa Trade Union, the head of communications, says the discussions were actually very difficult. And he joins me now on the line. Thank you very much for taking the time today, Bernard.
Hi, Ciara. How are you?
I am good, thank you. So, would you agree with John Boyle, the General Secretary of the INTO's assessment that, in general, unions are feeling positive after the government have signed off on this?
Well, I think right now, and since this time yesterday, workers in the public service have been looking at the details of the agreement and will be making their own assessments. The negotiators, and John was one of them, came out of the talks in the early hours of yesterday morning, saying that this was the best that could be achieved through negotiations at this time. It's certainly an improvement.
Can I just ask you, what does that mean? The best that can be achieved at this time?
Well,
break that down for me.
As you're aware, back in June, the government made an offer of 5%, and the union side, Forster and other unions, said that, you know, that wasn't adequate. There was then a long break of 10 weeks or so before we resumed the talks, and the government shifted its position, and we brought that along a little bit further in the negotiations. But it was clear to the union side that that was the government position and they weren't going to go any further. So our job now is to say frankly to workers in the public service that this is what's on offer. Let's look at the details. Members of unions will make the decisions through ballots and so on, and we'll see in a month or so where that leaves us. But certainly, I mean, from our perspective, we're looking at bigger pay increases, certainly than the original Building Momentum Agreement and more than the government tabled in June. It's a better phasing of those payments. You know, it's the phasing of it has been improved. And I think what's really, really important is we've achieved significantly more for the lower paid in the public service, which means that the people who are, you know, the people who need pay increases the most are going to get the most out of this agreement.
Bernard, you said that the discussions were difficult. Go into a little bit more detail in regards to the difficulty and why.
Well, I mean, in fairness, it's difficult for all concerned because, I mean, we're in a difficult economic period. The inflation that we're looking at, we haven't seen for decades in this country or across Europe. The situation in, you know, the Russian invasion of Ukraine has created a situation around energy costs that is unprecedented and unpredicted. And in fairness, even to the government side, I mean, everybody's trying to manage a situation that is, you know, unprecedented and difficult to deal with. So our job as trade unions is to try to preserve living standards as much as we can in that situation. A good deal of that we think should be achieved through pay, not just in the public service, but across the economy, where employers can afford pay increases. We think that they should be making those increases and doing their bit to get people over the cost of living crisis. And we'll also be looking to the government to, as it's promised to do, to be putting forward other measures, non-pay measures, that can ease the cost of living through, you know, reducing people's expenditure in areas like childcare and housing, health and so on. So I think there's a little bit of responsibility on the government now to make good on those promises in the budget next month, and we'll see where that leads us. And in the meantime, FORSA and other unions will be balloting their members on this package.
Yeah, so proposed agreement involves this 6.5% pay increase over the 2 years. The unions will be taking 5 weeks, including yourselves, to consider the offer. You'll take a collective decision on whether to accept the package or not on the 7th of October. And I know, look, this is me asking and you're not going to know. You couldn't possibly, because it's not the 7th of October. But if you were to answer the question today, which way do you think the unions will lead or will lean? If you know, all in all, with the signing today, they were pretty positive.
Well, the last time I made a prediction on air, I think it was to predict that the Brexit referendum would be a no to Brexit. So,
I'm doing a good job at them, obviously.
Since then, I've been very cautious about making predictions. What I would say is that, I mean, clearly, this is this proposal is a great improvement on what we have at the moment in terms of public service pay. It's also true to say, and nobody's candy-coating this, it doesn't fully make up for the gap between pay increases and current levels of inflation. I think that working people in the public service will look at this and make their own judgment about, you know, whether this is enough to say yes and to back the agreement, and then see where we are going into the future. It's not easy for anybody, and I think that, you know, we talk about industrial relations and these kinds of agreements all the time over the years, but I think there needs to be acknowledgement that people across the economy, wherever they work, whatever they do, are struggling now and heading into what's going to be a very difficult winter with energy costs and so on. So we're doing our best to reach an agreement that can ease that. We're looking to the government to do more on the non-pay front as well, and we think that that's important not just for public servants but for workers and families and communities across the economy.
Obviously as well, because the decision will be taken on the 7th of October, it will be post-budget this year, because we're hearing budget 2023 on the 27th of September, and the unions have warned that if there's a failure to bring an additional cost of living measures in the budget, it would be impacting on how workers will vote in the ballots on the deal, and I'm sure the government do completely understand that. But at the moment, this planned public pay deal will be till the end of 2023, because it will be backdated to February of 2022 this year, Bernard, isn't that right?
That's right. And I think, I mean, just on your first point there, I mean, the Minister McGrath and senior government spokespeople for the last number of weeks have repeatedly said that they're open to improving the pay aspects of, you know, the public service pay because of the inflation crisis, but that the whole burden couldn't rest on pay and there would be other measures. So I think it's definitely true to say that the people who will be voting on this proposal will be looking to see what else the government is doing. And it's, if you like, if they're keeping that side of the bargain in terms of the supports that can be made for working families, not just in the public service, but in every corner of the economy and society.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time. As always, that is the head of communications with FORSA Trade Union, Bernard Harbour, because the proposal from the Workplace Relations Commission on public sector pay, they have been signed off on by government, earlier this afternoon at about 12 o'clock. And if the unions do agree to it, there will be a 6.5% increase in pay over the next 2 years, because it will be backdated, as I said there a moment ago, to February 2022, so until the end of 2023 there. But they won't be making their full decision on that until the 7th of October.